the old adage, no man or woman is an island, obviously applies here. But I mean, we are created as relational beings. And even post-fall, we carry that need for relationship. And there are obviously many appropriate kinds of physical touch and interactions. But just think about that. We have now told people, and I'm not saying we shouldn't take precautions, but we're almost creating a culture now where when I go to the supermarket, I'm to view someone else as a potential disease carrier.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Pastor Theologian Show. Today our guest is Pastor Ryan Davidson, who is a CPT fellow as well as the pastor at Grace Baptist Chapel in Hampton, Virginia. Ryan, in addition to being a pastor theologian, is a trained therapist, and today we are talking with him about mental health and pastoral ministry, as well as the unique challenges that are coming to the surface in terms of mental health in light of the coronavirus pandemic. Let's get right into our conversation.
Ryan, thanks for being on the show today. We're delighted to have you join us and grateful for you taking the time out of what I'm sure is a bit of a hectic reality for you, for all of us. So thank you for being with us today.
Absolutely. Glad to do it.
Hey, Ryan. Good to have you.
Yeah. So, Ryan, we are excited to talk with you. You know, we've been talking with our CPT fellows on podcasts in recent weeks about how they are shepherding their congregations through the global pandemic and the new realities, the challenging realities, and how their churches are responding. And there have been some really encouraging and I think helpful conversations. And we were excited to talk to you. We are excited to talk to you because you, amongst our CPT fellows, have a unique background and training in addition to your theological education, Ryan. You've got a master's in counseling. You're a trained counselor therapist. I think that's unique amongst our 100 CPT fellows. And so we thought you would be really well-positioned to help us think through the mental health issues that have emerged or that we're seeing in a new light because of coronavirus, and in particular, the shelter in place and lockdown and the social isolation that comes from that. So we're looking forward to talking with you and having you shed some light on those things as a trained therapist and helping us think through those issues and share some of your wisdom with our listeners. But Ryan, before we jump in, would love to have you share a little bit about your own journey, your personal background and educational path, and sort of how did you get to where you are today, to give our listeners a little more context about who you are as a person. So give us the 3 or 4 minute version, not the 30 minute version, brother. We're going to have you back on the podcast to get the more extended version, because there's a lot of interesting twists and turns I know from your own story and journey, but give us the swift overview, and then we can get into the meat of our discussion.
Sure. Well, again, thanks for having me on, guys. Good to connect with you. I'm married to Christy. We have 4 kids, ranging in age from 13 down to 6, and I'm serving as the pastor of Grace Baptist Chapel. It's a Reformed Baptist congregation in Hampton, Virginia, and we've been there a little over 12 years. Prior to that, I was the administrator of a Christian counseling center. After I finished undergrad training in Birmingham, Alabama, took a position at a church and began to work on a master's in counseling, psychotherapy, if you will, at the College of William & Mary in Williamsburg, and eventually got licensed as a licensed professional counselor and doing outpatient Christian counseling. Had some experience in psychiatric hospital as a student clinician, and then eventually kind of worked my way up to do, you know, half the week I was doing counseling and the other half of the week I was helping to run the counseling center. And then about 12 years ago, went to my second church staff position, full-time staff position at Grace, and still do some counseling and counseling supervision, but do less of it now and more pastoral ministry. Picked up seminary training along the way, and then, Lord willing, and with the benefit of this quarantine, hopefully in the next few weeks, I'll be done with my PhD dissertation, which has to do with counseling in the early church. So that's a little bit of my background.
Yeah, that's fantastic. We seriously, we're going to have you back on to talk about your dissertation, because that's super intriguing, and we're going to want to hear more about that. And so, mental health, Ryan, is already a serious issue in the United States. I think you'd agree with that. I think I pick up a statistic that nearly 1 in 5 American adults struggle with some kind of mental health issue. I mean, that's millions of adults. And and I think it's fair to say that we in the church often have a hard time engaging, and some might even say even acknowledging that taking seriously that mental health is an issue. Mental health issues are an issue. Is that your sense as well, Ryan? That we as a church tend to struggle with even acknowledging mental health issues, and why is that?
Yeah, why?
I think that is the case. I think that's in some contexts, in perhaps broader, American kind of Western kind of contexts in churches, I think that's slowly changing. But I think what I've seen is, you know, many of us confess that, you know, as image bearers, God has made us as body and soul, and we often focus, sometimes over focus on the soul aspect of things and forget that we are body and soul. And so particularly pastors, I think, you know, a lot of our training is to focus on soul and spiritual issues, and that is good and right. But if we neglect or forget the fact that our parishioners, our congregants, are bodies as well, and broken bodies at that, we'll neglect a whole host of contributing factors to the lives of the people that we shepherd.
And of course, the assumption that perhaps is at play in that, but for me, would have needed to have been stated outright, you know, just even a few years ago, is that our brains are part of our bodies.
Right.
Because I think there's, you know, however the Platonic or baptized version of Christian dualism plays out, I feel like I had a conception of our mind and our mental health actually being part of the disembodied part of us. And you can just like, you ought to be able to pray the depression away or read a good psalm and feel better, and not taking seriously the our brain is it's a bodily organ. It's part of, you know, our physical makeup. It's not separate from that.
Right. So I think, you know, if I had to put my finger on the main reason, and I don't know this with complete, you know, certainty, but I think if I had to make an educated guess, it would be that we neglect those kinds of reminders in our pastoral care.
Say that again, Ryan. We neglect the
just the reality that we are body and soul, and that our bodies are broken because of the fall. Sometimes because of our own sin, but a lot of times it's because of who we are as fallen human beings, and our minds, our brains are impacted by that as well.
Yeah, for sure. And what have you found to be helpful in your pastoral ministry, kind of combining your counseling background now with your theological education and pastoral ministry calling to, what have you found to be helpful in moving people along in that journey of self-awareness and self-understanding about mental health and about the integrated connection between body and soul? What helps? What helps turn the lights on for folks?
Well, I think one of the things we've done is we've had reading groups and even some CPT resourced reading groups on mental health in our church. Just from a theological perspective, just reminding people of who we are as broken human beings, and even just having the discussions about depression. You know, we have an annual conference every year. We call it the Theology Conference. And One year we brought in a speaker who dealt with the Christian and emotions and who we are as body and soul. And so having, even if a pastor is not a trained counselor, having an awareness and trying to create yeah. that awareness, even theologically within the body.
Yes.
And then seeing that work its way into one-on-one counseling situations as pastors.
Yeah. That's a great word, Ryan, because I think pastors can oftentimes feel a bit intimidated and under-equipped to speak yes. to mental health issues. But I like what you're saying, which is maybe the most important thing pastors can do is create the theological context for taking mental health issues seriously, or you might say providing the theological permission giving,
yes.
if you will, for taking mental health issues seriously. And that's probably for many people in our congregations, 80% of the task of just having the pastor affirm from scripture and the theological tradition of the church that these are realities that we need to take seriously as embodied human beings.
Embodiment is a concept of theological anthropology that's fundamental and should be close at hand for pastors with even limited theological training. I think is so helpful to think about it that way. You don't need to dig into the brain science or know about, trauma therapy or anything like that. That is probably appropriately in many cases for many pastors above your pay grade. But telling people in your congregation that you are created by God as an embodied creature, and that has implications for your physical health, but also your mental health. And there are good gifts that God has given to people in various industries to help you with that. I think that's really good. Just to echo what you're saying, Todd.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, no, for sure. And so coronavirus has been, in many ways, hasn't it, a kind of perfect storm for the mental health in the United States, and no doubt around the rest of the world, where we already have. I mean, this is just an incredibly stressful time for all of us, from job loss, financial insecurity, worry about the health of loved ones. I have older parents. My wife has older parents, and we're kind of a little bit anxious about all of that and how they're doing. And we, and then you add on top of that, Ryan, social distancing and isolation and lockdown in many places and shelter in place. That is, I think, I don't have a degree in counseling, but I'm pretty sure social isolation is one of the worst things for mental health, right? I mean, it's become a health necessity in terms of combating coronavirus, but it really is a perfect storm. What's the link there between social isolation and the surge I think we're seeing in the United States in mental health issues? And I should say, not just mental health, but also drug. Use of drugs and alcohol. I think we're seeing a surge in that as well. So, talk to us about that.
Yes. Well, I think there are two components. First, the reality that this whole coronavirus, this COVID-19 situation, has changed just about every structure of our lives. I'm sitting here 9 weeks in from gathering with my own people in a church building. It's changing everything. But before we talk about larger structures, you mentioned social distancing. I mean, I think there's a sense in which, particularly for those who are depressed, a variety of diagnoses in the kind of depressive or mood disorder category, this just further heightens it. There's certain symptoms that I think, feelings of hopelessness, despair. These things can rise when we have, less frequent connections to those outside of our own home. I would encourage pastors to consider, and anyone listening, to consider just the impact on the population with depression. And then if you move out to anxiety, and this goes beyond just social distancing. I mean, in my clinical practice, one of the emphases I spend a lot of time working with were individuals with anxiety. And so think about a person in an average church setting who has the diagnosis of obsessive compulsive disorder. And now we've told them that they need to be afraid of every person in the culture. They need to wash their hands. They need to try to get sanitizer, which none of us can seem to get these days, right? And so just those two factors alone are going to increase the symptomology in those who already carry some kind of diagnosis. But those that don't, that just experience a low-grade anxiety, I think we're going to see a rise. I had some connection with a counseling center that was moving all of their counseling in the last, 2 months to online counseling, and they're not struggling because people are reaching out for that, you know.
Yes, and Ryan, don't you think it's the case? My wife and I have been talking. You're a counselor. I'm going to confess a little something here that we were talking. We both have struggled over the last couple of weeks with acute neck pain. We wake up each morning and our necks are so sore. And we're like, what's wrong with the pillows? Or we're sleeping wrong? I think we both have come to the conclusion that it's our body's way of processing the stress and the anxiety of the situation. But I don't know that I would have – it'd be very easy for me not to categorize it as that because I have not historically been someone who struggled with mental health. But I think a lot of us, do you think this is right? That probably a lot of us are struggling with low grade anxiety, trying to digest this whole situation. And it's showing up in our bodies, it's showing up in our moods in ways that we don't really even quite appreciate fully.
Yes, I don't think that would be a stretch. In fact, if we think about how we're body and soul, and yet we also need to have as a part of that the two interact and work together as a united whole, in a sense. And so, I mean, if I had someone who was talking to me now in our church, all of the biological things are impacted by routines. I mean, our diets are changing, our exercise patterns are changing. We're eating, probably some of us are eating things that we used to try to avoid, and so there are a lot of phenomena that are impacting how our bodies are going to be able to handle the stress because we're developing new habits. And so all of this together is only going to exacerbate anxiety and depression that may be there. And look, I mean, the Lord, I think about Heidelberg Catechism question number one, what is your only comfort in life and death, right? The answer begins that I am not my own, but belong with body and soul, both in life and death, to my faithful Savior, Jesus Christ. The Lord Christ has us completely body and soul, and that is our ultimate hope. But that doesn't mean that temporarily, on the road to the celestial city, if you will, our bodies aren't going to be wrestling with all kinds of brokenness, that it's going to be expressed. And so, yes, bodily symptoms that are new, routine symptoms that are new, diets, exercise, lack of physical touch. I mean, all kinds of things are changing, to include the fear that we're not going to be able to have our stock portfolio or we're not going to be able to find toilet paper, right? And all the extremes in between, right?
What is it, Ryan, about physical touch and bodily presence that is, if you will, therapeutic and helpful in healing and combats mental health issues? What is it about just being in the presence of other people? It's a kind of a marvelous thing, really.
Right. I mean,
what's going on there?
The old adage, no man or woman is an island, obviously applies here, but I mean, we are created as relational beings, and even post-fall, we carry that need for relationship. And there are obviously many appropriate kinds of physical touch and interactions. But just think about that. We have now told people, and I'm not saying we shouldn't take precautions, but we're almost creating a culture now where when I go to the supermarket, I'm to view someone else as a potential disease carrier. and I need to wear a mask. And if they don't have a mask, then maybe there's something suspicious. And so not only are we lacking the typical physical touch, can we shake hands? Can we hug? Can we embrace? But we're now almost changing how we view other people.
Yes.
And so that causes us to turn inward, perhaps more introspective, and community is just harder. I mean, most of our interactions besides our own households are through a computer screen. And we already struggled as a society with that prior to this. And now we're basically living on it, just staring at people through a computer screen, which is just not completely natural.
Yeah, and just as you were talking, the formative aspect of you know, under normal circumstances, our ability to talk to people and be in close proximity with people is obviously very formative to us. And then having all that taken away in the current season is formative in a different way. And this has been like, I'm thinking about my 3-year-old daughter, and when we are out of the house, just kind of walking around the neighborhood, she has learned very effectively. Like, she knows what social distancing is. She knows about the coronavirus, and she has learned now whenever she sees another person kind of round the corner on the sidewalk towards us, she, her body reacts and she moves off to the side, and she's still very sweet, but it just is kind of, it's just hard to see this little 3-year-old person have a response to every single person that she sees out in the world that I cannot get close to them.
And Todd, to kind of connect this to your question initially, what is it about physical touch? Sometimes it's that our bodies, there are certain chemicals that our bodies emit when we have a physical touch, you know, a hug, a handshake, but even just common gestures. You know, I was at the supermarket early this morning, and the woman in the line ahead of me dropped an item out of her cart and she didn't realize it. And so normally I would just pick it up and say to her, "Here you go." And I asked her, I said, is this yours? And she said, yes. And normally I would pick it up, but I had to ask, would you like me to pick it up for you? And so now I can't even have a normal interaction that would portray some kind of human to human level of care that's physical. Right, I can't do that, because if I do it without asking, that might cause her more anxiety, because you know I might have germs. Right, so these kinds of interactions impact the way that we think and the way that we feel.
Probably don't. I mean, obviously, we don't appreciate yet the impact of this on our society as a whole going forward. You know, going out 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year, 2 years of how we have reframed things. Zach, the example of your daughter Gracie and her—that's a bit of a parable, really, isn't it? Of how we're being conditioned to interact socially with others. That's going to have some implications going forward for us. Talk to us, Ryan, about how things are going on the ground in your congregation. And what are you, help us see your pastoral responsibilities and your shepherding of your congregation through your eyes as someone who is more attuned to mental health issues than perhaps other pastors would be. What are you seeing? What are you looking for? How are you engaging with your flock?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's multifaceted. You know, is everyone being cared for spiritually? Are they plugged in? You know, then there's the level of how's everyone doing economically? Who's filing for unemployment? Who's potentially in need of benevolence from the church? Then there's the level of is anyone sick? And one of the things we've tried to do, our elders, is to regularly tell our congregation, look, we don't know of anyone who's sick, but if you become sick, please don't feel ashamed to tell us. We want to care for you. We don't want the person to say, well, I'm the first person in the congregation with this virus, and now I'm going to be viewed as, you know, a disease carrier. And there's potentially shame there. And so there's multiple levels. In addition to trying to watch out for those who are already struggling with a variety of things, how are they doing now that this has been added on top of it? So it really is uncharted territory. At least I would say maybe since what, World War II, or maybe the Spanish flu of 1918, 1919. And we, one of my brother pastors was telling me, we're the first people to do this with social media and computer connectedness.
Yes.
So it really is uncharted waters. And then on top of that, you're going to have in a congregation some who are ready to start meeting, defying, you know, defying regulations, and others who are not going to want to meet for many more months, even if we were told we could.
And so, how are you thinking about that and pastoring your congregation through that tension, Ryan, where you're going to have some who are eager to get back together, others who are a little anxious about it? And you all the while knowing it's good to be together physically. How do you balance that?
Well, I think if we can tie it to the text as much as possible, I mean, you know, Romans 14 or 1 Corinthians 8 comes to mind here. This, you know, we may have differences of opinions here regarding either the politics of this or even not so much the science, but just how we live in light of the science in terms of this. And so if we could keep, our citizenship as, you know, as members of the kingdom ahead of even our citizenship within this particular country in this time period. And what does it mean theologically to consider others as more important than ourselves? I think, and we're just starting this, but I think that will help us to maintain unity when whatever decision we make is not going to be the most ideal to 100% of any congregation, you know?
Yeah.
And giving them freedom in their own conscience to say, look, if we start services here in a few weeks and you're not comfortable, we understand. Like, please feel the freedom to do that. Catch the live stream while we offer it, and let's just move forward together. Because it does have the potential to be a source of disunity. Thankfully, in my congregation, I don't sense that. But it could be in any congregation. So we've got to keep the gospel central.
And that's, I think, so helpful to think forward to, because certainly it will be the case that people, even after the danger has passed, will be gripped with, you know, what you could call a post-traumatic stress response, a crippling anxiety that will prohibit you, or at least make it very difficult for you to re-engage with people out in the world. It doesn't take a lot of imagination to, just suppose that that will be a common thing that many people are facing after this.
Yep.
And that's really helpful.
Yeah, we need to consider how, and a brother of mine, we were talking the other day about how COVID is conditioning us. Particularly as the church, and you know, what is it going to be like months from now when I walk into our worship center, sanctuary, whatever it's called in various churches, and I see people? Am I still going to be tempted to see them as a disease carrier, someone to watch out for, or are they an image bearer who is redeemed, who is my brother or my sister?
Wow!
And what does that mean? And how might I need to see them as someone that I actually need, and I need a physical connection with them in terms of assembling together each Lord's Day? So there's a lot to think about.
Wow, that's really good. That's really good. Ryan, two final questions. One is, you mentioned the habits. Our habits are being changed, and that's having a big impact on body and soul. You're talking about diet and exercise. What are some things that we can be doing, that congregants can be doing, along the lines of habits, daily habits or regular habits, to help stay spiritually and mentally healthy and well?
Good question. I mean, I think having as much connection with each other as we can, whether that's phone, through the computer, whatever is possible there. So obviously, spiritual disciplines. These are helpful things. I think also embracing some of the benefits of kind of the sabbatical type feel, spending time with family, maybe even analyzing the benefits of life being less busy right now. But I would say taking care of the body is important, trying to continue to get sleep, trying to get exercise. These kinds of things can be helpful to us. And even if it's, walking up and down the street to maintain some kind of cardiovascular, health, these can be stress relievers. You know, we often think, well, I'm not under stress because, I mean, I'm at home all day, but we're under a different kind of stress. And so we need those kinds of physical stress relievers to help us biologically, physiologically.
And then finally, what can pastors be doing? Maybe if you had one or two recommendations for pastors or charges, encouragements to the pastors that are listening, hey, be leaning into this during this season. What would you say?
I would say, number one, as you pray for your people, consider what physical needs there may be that are increased during this season. And, if you're counseling individuals in the body, consider the impact of this entire physical situation on what they're experiencing. Yeah. It may be that they need the exhortation to read the Bible and pray, but it also may be that you need to consider their lack of exercise, their lack of sleep, their lack of normalcy in their routines. And so just don't, again, to bring us back to where we are at the beginning, as you pray and shepherd your people, remember that they are soul, but they are body. And what do I as a pastor need to consider about the impacts of this whole thing on the bodies of those individuals that God has given me to be a shepherd over?
Mm. That's a great word, brother. Thank you for that. Thank you for sharing your perspective, your wisdom, your experience with us. We're grateful for you, grateful for your ministry. Ryan, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for being here, Ryan.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the CPT Podcast, a theology podcast for the church. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider throwing us a like, sharing the podcast online, subscribing, leaving a review. Anything like that would go a long way towards helping other people hear about the podcast. The CPT Podcast is a ministry of the Center for Pastor Theologians. You can learn more about the CPT by visiting us at pastortheologians.com. You can also find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Our host for today's episode was Todd Wilson. Our producer and editor was Trenton Jones. Our music was composed by Andrew Gerlicher. I'm Zach Wagner. Thanks for listening.